Good morning, and thank you all for holding. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question and answer portion. At that time, please press star one. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. I would like to remind all parties the call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Allison Garrett from NOAA. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Alon. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Allison Garrett, and I am the Public Affairs Officer for NOAA Fisheries in the Southeast. At the end of this call, I will share my contact information should anyone need to reach me later on. As you saw in the news advisory, today NOAA is declaring an unusual mortality event for elevated bottlenose dolphin strandings in the northern Gulf of Mexico, including Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and the panhandle of Florida. Alabama border through Franklin County, just to be very clear there. This call is for the working news media. We'll have some brief statements followed by some questions and answers with our experts. I would like to now turn it over to NOAA experts, Dr. Aaron Fougere and Dr. Terry Rolls. The spellings of their names and their titles are in the news advisory that you received. And I'm going to turn it over now to Aaron.
Thank you, Allison. My name is Aaron Fougere, and I am the Marine Mammal Stranding Program Administrator for NOAA Fisheries Southeast Region in St. Petersburg, Florida. As Allison mentioned, today we are declaring an unusual mortality event, or UME, for common bottlenose dolphins in the northern Gulf of Mexico from Franklin County in the Florida Panhandle through Louisiana. The Marine Mammal Protection Act defines an unusual mortality event as a stranding event that is unexpected, involves a significant die-off, and demands an immediate response. Since February 1st of this year, we have documented bottlenose dolphin strandings of approximately three times the historical average in the northern Gulf. Specifically, between February 1st and May 31st, 261 dolphins have stranded, compared to the historical average of 87 animals for this time period. The strandings have continued in June, and as of June 12th, there have been 279 strandings in this UME. Bottlenose dolphins are one of the most studied and well-known marine mammals in the wild and can be found in temperate and tropical offshore and coastal waters, including bays, sounds, and estuaries. In the northern Gulf, there are 17 stocks or populations of bottlenose dolphins in the area impacted by this UME, including two coastal stocks and 15 bay, sound, and estuary stocks. When strandings occur, necropsies or animal autopsies are performed, depending on the decomposition state of the animal, to help scientists understand how the animal died. For this event, full or partial necropsy examinations have been conducted on some dolphins. However, many of the dolphins have stranded in a moderate to advanced state of decomposition, limiting the ability to collect samples to determine a cause of illness or death. In addition, a number of dolphins have stranded in remote locations or been reported well after the fact, limiting the ability to recover some animals for examination. Some of the stranded dolphins have had visible skin lesions that are consistent with freshwater exposure, and samples are being collected for testing. I'm now going to hand this over to Dr. Terry Rolls, who will talk about the unusual mortality event declaration.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Terry Rolls. I'm the National Coordinator of the Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Response Program for NOAA, and I work out of the Office of Protected Resources here in Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm going to talk a little bit about the UME process and how we make declarations and what the public can do to assist. Prior to the declaration of an unusual mortality event, a panel of experts that are appointed by the NOAA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and the Marine Mammal Commission use seven criteria to assess whether the strandings that they're evaluating are a potential unusual mortality event. And then they recommend to NOAA whether or not a UME should be declared. In this case, the working group determined that these bottlenose dolphin strandings in the northern Gulf meet two of the seven criteria. Number one, a marked increase in the magnitude or a marked change in the nature of morbidity, mortality, or strandings when compared to prior records. And Aaron has just described what those numbers were. And number five, affected animals exhibit similar unusual pathological findings, behavioral patterns, clinical signs, or general physical condition. what happens now that a UME has been declared? The first thing that will happen is there will be an appointment of an on-site coordinator. And the on-site coordinator will work with the Straining Network and NOAA and other partners to guide the response and assist with procuring resources to assist with the response. In addition, a UME investigative team will also be formed or established to guide the data and information collection and sample collection to better inform information about the cause or the contributing causes for the event or the number of carcasses we're observing. These two efforts will provide a more targeted response plan that includes assessing responder needs and means of allocating additional resources. And number two, develop a science plan to better understand the mortalities and their causal or contributing factors. The public can assist and can play an important role in helping NOAA and our partners respond to and investigate these strandings. First, we urge the public to report any sick, stranded, or dead dolphins to the local stranding network. It is important that the public not approach any marine mammals in distress and not approach or disturb carcasses. You can hurt yourself as well as the animal, and it's illegal. To report an animal to the Southeast Marine Mammal Stranding Network, the public can call 1-877-WHALE-HELP or 1-877-942-5343. For mariners at sea that are outside of cell phone range, you can report the information to the U.S. Coast Guard on Channel 16, and they will relay that information to the appropriate reporting entity. Also, the daily response to bottlenose dolphins and other marine mammals in distress is more often conducted by our Marine Mammal Stranding Network and in the Gulf, the Northern Gulf Marine Mammal Stranding Network, made up of partners in academic organizations, nonprofits, NGOs, and or our states. Many Stranding Network partners rely heavily on in-kind support or donations. The public can assist with these efforts, in-kind support or donations, by reaching out to their local Stranding Network directly and provide donations to the UME Contingency Fund directly by going to pay.gov. And those links and information of how to get to the Stranding Network partners are up on our website. Thank you, and back to you, Allison.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Erin. So, Ilan, we're going to open it up now for questions from the media. This is for Working News Media, and if you could give them some instructions, that would be great. Thank you.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question today is from Ann Thompson from NBC News.
Hi, Terry. Hi, Erin. Thank you so much for doing this call. When I looked at the map of where the dolphins stranded, I couldn't help but think of the BP oil spill. And I know that you don't have a reason for this, but is that something you would look at as perhaps a reason why the dolphins are stranded?
Thank you for the question, Ann. And Yes, I know you're very familiar with the work that we did in our investigation for the natural resource damage assessment for the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. In that event, we did determine health impacts of bottlenose dolphins in some of the exact same areas that we're talking about for this UME. We do know that some of the health conditions that were observed during the Deepwater Horizon oil spill and shortly thereafter are improving, but some have been slow to improve. Reproduction in the heaviest oiled areas continue to be abnormal, and we will be, as part of this investigation, working to investigate whether the event could be related to or partially related to any long-term effects from the oil spill. certainly be looking at a lot of different factors, but that would be one of the factors that we would be looking at.
Thank you. Our next question is from Janet McConaughey from the Associated Press.
How is, I know that there's been 126 of the deaths in Mississippi. How do the others split up by state? And does it appear that the fresh water from the Bonnie Carey spillway contributed?
Sure. This is Erin answering this. So as of June 12th, the breakdown for strandings by state is the Florida Panhandle had 37 strandings from February 1st through June 12th. Alabama had 32 strandings in that time frame. Mississippi had 121 strandings in that time frame, and Louisiana had 89. So that's the breakdown by state. So we are seeing higher numbers in Mississippi and Louisiana. And we are concerned about fresh water. It's an exceptionally wet winter for the entire United States, and it's the wettest winter in the Mississippi Valley in the past 124 years. So there are a lot of freshwater inputs into the Northern Gulf right now, just from river drainages and natural inputs, as well as the Bonnie Carey spillway. So there is just a lot of freshwater and low salinity in the area right now. So we are seeing some animals with freshwater skin lesions, and that is one potential contributing factor that we're looking into right now.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mark Schlefstein from PQ.
Hey, guys. Janet just asked my two questions, so I will pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, and to withdraw your request, star 2. Our next question is from David Elliott from WLOX TV Biloxi.
Thank you. The last answer was close to what I want, but I'd like you to amplify on it a little bit. The necropsies so far, in terms of results, have shown what? And is it consistent with high levels of fresh water mixed in? And I'm talking specifically about the Mississippi Sound.
Karen, can you take that?
Oh, sure. I'm happy to take that. So we've conducted full or partial necropsy examinations on on some dolphins, excuse me. But as we said, a number of the dolphins have been in a moderate to advanced state of decomposition. So the number of animals that have been moderately or more decomposed is about 78%. Excuse me. So we have a high number of animals that are very decomposed, in which case we might not ever be able to determine a cause of illness or death. But for the animals that have been investigated, we are seeing, as we mentioned earlier, some animals with signs of visible skin lesions that are consistent with freshwater exposure. The number of animals, which is probably a minimum estimate because it's across all decomposition categories for animals with freshwater skin lesions, is approximately 23%. As I said, that may be a minimum number. So there are some animals with visible signs of skin lesions consistent with freshwater exposure. But it's too early at this point to say, whether that is the cause of the mortalities. And then there are animals that that don't have skin lesions, and we're still investigating, what the potential causes or contributing factors are for those mortalities. So freshwater is one factor we're considering, but, it doesn't appear just upon gross necropsy to be the cause of death for all the animals, and so it's something that we're continuing to investigate.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tiffany Wong from Fox 8.
Hello. So I know you were talking about how freshwater is something that you guys are considering as a contributing factor. So moving forward, how will you guys be able to identify the exact cause? Because I know the spillway opened, the Bonnie Carey spillway opened last year, and we didn't have this many dolphin deaths.
So this is Terry. So as Erin talked about, one of the first signs for looking at exposure to freshwater are visible skin lesions. Most of the carcasses are decomposed, and that may not be possible. In addition, for those fresher carcasses, we can collect both gross necropsy data and also histopathology from the animals observed. And from those samples, most of which the data is not back yet, but from that, we should be able to look at types of lesions and information about what's going on with the internal body systems. In addition, we'll continue to monitor the environmental conditions by checking into the websites that are set up to look at salinity in certain geographic areas. In addition, we also will be using our pathology and the gross necropsy to identify additional diagnostic tools that may be needed and move forward with those. As I said, we'll be bringing together a group of technical experts to help guide the investigation and collect and evaluate all the necropsy reports and histopathology results that we have in to date.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, for the next question. Our next question is from David Elliott from WLOX TV Biloxi.
Yes, while we've been concentrating on the freshwater component from the Bonnie Carey spillway release, what about just water quality in general, whether it be from agriculture, urbanization, pesticides, pollution? Besides the freshwater and salinity dynamic, is there a possibility that all of these contaminants in the Mississippi River water may also be contributing to this mortality rate?
Hi, yes, this is Erin. So that is certainly one factor that we are concerned about and we'll be looking into. So we're concerned about the low salinity, what could potentially be draining into the water with the low salinity. We're also concerned about some of the more indirect impacts to the dolphins, such as alterations in the prey that they might normally be feeding on, that could also be, you know, negatively impacted by either the low salinity or other things that are going on in the Northern Gulf. So there's a number of factors that we'll be looking at as part of this investigation, but it's too early at this point to say, you know, what may be causing the mortalities.
We are showing no further questions at this time. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Janet McConaughey from the Associated Press.
Just to be sure, was that Erin who answered the third question, the one about what have the necropsies shown?
Yes, that's right.
And also, what about sea turtles?
So we have had reports of, this is Erin again, we have had reports of increased strandings of sea turtles in Louisiana and Mississippi, and the investigations into the causes of those sea turtle mortalities is underway. Strandings for those animals are above the running 5- and 10-year averages, but are lower than have been documented in some previous years, and we do not suspect that the current sea turtle strandings are related to freshwater exposure, but we do have concerns that decreased salinity could also have longer-term effects on their prey and habitat, as we are concerned about for dolphins.
Our next question is from Ann Thompson from NBC News.
Erin and Terry, just so that I get this right, are these strandings all deaths? Are the vast majority deaths? Do we know?
Sure. Yeah, I can answer that one. So yes, the vast majority have been dead stranded. 2% of the animals have been live stranded, but that means 98% have been dead stranded.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from David Elliott from WLOX-TV Biloxi.
I think a lot of people would be curious to know, considering the intelligence of dolphins and their behavior, why are they not instinctively seeking water with higher salinity levels, heading further out into the Gulf of Mexico, if you will?
Sure. So this is Erin again. Resident stocks of bottlenose dolphins in the bays, sounds, and estuaries, which, you know, as we earlier mentioned, is 15 of the stocks that are impacted in this mortality event. They often exhibit strong lifelong site fidelity to a really small, well-defined home range, and they don't tend to leave that home range despite environmental challenges that might negatively impact their health. And that's been documented with red tide, for example, in Sarasota, Florida, and in other locations. So they might redistribute within a habitat or within their home range, but they won't typically leave their resident area.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1. And our next question is from Tiffany Wong from Fox 8.
I was wondering if you could also touch on the oysters and shrimp and crab mortality rates, just because I know the task forces here in Louisiana are working together for emergency declarations because they have high kills as well.
Hey, Tiffany, this is Allison Garrett. We don't have that information.
Okay.
And our next question is from Janet McConaughey from the Associated Press.
Going back to the necropsies, you said that probably a minimum of 23% of the dolphins that could be necropsied had skin lesions. What does that work out to in actual numbers of dolphins that could be necropsied and the numbers that had skin lesions?
Sure. So I don't think it's the number of animals that could be necropsied that had skin lesions, but it's the number of animals that were reported in our stranding records with visible signs of skin lesions. So that's irregardless of whether or not they were actually necropsied. So 23% of the reported strandings since February have had visible signs of skin lesions that are consistent with freshwater exposure. Our next question comes from David Elliott from WLOX-TV Biloxi.
Thank you. Regarding the unusual mortality event, Could I just get a general synopsis once again? I know you touched on it. In terms of what is being done beginning today with this investigative team and the study, and precisely what variety of entities are involved in this process?
So today the stranding network was notified that a UME has been declared, and we are waiting for the appointment of an on-site coordinator. We will set up our response calls early next week and take accounting of what the resource needs are from the stranding network and whether they need additional personnel or what. We'll get more information about the necropsy findings that they have as well, so that can help guide diagnostic laboratories and access to additional diagnostic laboratories that we have. We will be establishing an investigative team, and they will then work to come up with, take a look at the findings to date, talk about additional analysis and sample collection we want for carcasses and live animals that go into the future from here on out, and then guide additional diagnostics for the samples that are currently in hand.
Was that Aaron or Terry?
That was Terry. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for questions. I'll turn the call back to the speakers for closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you, Elon. This is Allison Garrett. I just want to thank you all for joining us, and hopefully you got your questions answered, but I did want to share my contact information just in case. It's Allison Garrett, Public Affairs for NOAA Fisheries in the Southeast. My cell phone number is 727-330-0309, and my email is Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, .Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, at NOAA.gov, should you need to reach me later on. Again, thank you for joining us, and have a great afternoon. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.